The internet can be a brutal place. It's like wearing your middle school yearbook as a sweater. It's like a hate volcano. It sees everything, records everything, and retains everything. Or does it? Find out about the right to be forgotten on this episode of The End of the Law. Hello, and welcome to The End of the Law, the show that looks at what happens when the extremes of humanity meet the fringes of the law. Every other week, Radio Free Brooklyn allows me to pick out some news story and examine it under existing law to find out how the law deals with modern messes. I'm Grant Shubin, and I'm the host. Today's episode is about the right to be forgotten. It's a weird right. Some say it isn't a right. We're going to talk about it all the same. We're also going to talk about the freedom of speech and the right to privacy because turns out the law is a mess and cannot deal with the question of being forgotten, especially when the internet is in the mix. Before all that, though, a few orders of business. First, Radio Free Brooklyn is now on Patreon, a community and website where you can go and help support us by becoming a patron and donating as little as $1 a month. And that's no slouchy offer. Radio Free Brooklyn is totally volunteer maintained and operated, and it takes a lot of work and a little bit of money. So if you like this show or any of the 55 other original programs on Radio Free Brooklyn, go to www.patreon.com/Radio Free Brooklyn and become a patron. Second, please email me. Let me know what you think of the show. Let me know if there's anything especially you're curious about. Let me know what you don't want to hear. The show's email is theendofthelaw@gmail.com, and I'd really like to get your feedback about episodes and topics or whatever else comes to mind. Finally, a brief recap of last week's episode. Last week, my pals Julie Opperman and Sina Alavi came in, and we talked about modern slavery, about how slavery is different now than it was a few hundred years ago, about how international law had a major part in abolishing the old type of slavery, and about how international law is failing the new type of slavery. Ultimately, I try to make the point that economics is on slavery's side. Lucrative business always outmaneuvers the law. Still, the reality is modern slavery is a broad enough problem to implicate all of us. Enforcing international law isn't going to end slavery on its own. It's going to take some massive-scale economic and social shift. What that shift is and where we find it, I don't know. But I figure getting the issue out there can't hurt. But enough of that. Let's turn to today's show, The Right to Be Forgotten. What am I even talking about, the right to be forgotten? That's not really a right we hear about. It's not like the right to remain silent or the right to an attorney. Well, we don't hear about it for three major reasons. First, it's new, like really new. The first time a modern court ever recognized it was in May 2014, not even 2 years ago. Second, it's controversial and not very well defined. How forgotten is forgotten is not really something that the law has sorted out yet. And third, we don't really have it in the United States. We sort of used to, and now we don't really. Actually, the European Union and some of its countries are the only governing bodies to formally embrace the right to be forgotten. But I still haven't described what it is. What is the right to be forgotten? Well, it's a creature of the times, that's for sure. Well, actually, the US flirted with it in the 1930s and 40s and quickly decided it wasn't going to happen. In its modern form, it grew out of the internet and its never-ending appetite for information about you and me and anything we've ever done. That is, the right to be forgotten was not really a major issue until looking up the warts in someone's past became as easy as typing a person's name into Google. So the right to be forgotten would guarantee that information that is inaccurate, inadequate, irrelevant, or excessive would be wiped from internet search results. And while that definition is unquestionably boring and seemingly simple, there's actually a lot to it, so let's unpack it a bit. The first thing worth noting is that the right to be forgotten as it exists now only guarantees the deletion of certain information about you from internet search results. Deletion from Google, basically. Unless you use Bing. But you don't use Bing. Because Bing. Anyway, the right to be forgotten doesn't include deletion of source material of information, like newspapers or official public records. Only search results that might turn those things up. In other words, the right to be forgotten is like going to the library and tearing up the card catalog but leaving the books alone. Advocates for the right highlight this point. They say that instead of deleting information out there in the public, the right instead preserves privacy by making certain information more difficult to find. Those against the right say making it unsearchable is the same as deleting the information, particularly nowadays when internet search represents a huge portion of internet-based research. The second part of the definition I want to look at are the factors that outline what information that right would have deleted. Again, to highlight those factors, the right to be forgotten guarantees that information out there in the world that is inaccurate, inadequate, irrelevant, or excessive would be deleted on internet search engines. And from these factors, we can see what the right to be forgotten isn't. And in a lot of ways, the right to be forgotten doesn't really go all that far down the road of actually being forgotten. The factors only outline a very small subset of information. Having inaccurate information about you deleted hardly qualifies as being forgotten. And for that matter, having inadequate information, whatever that means, irrelevant information, or excessive information deleted in no way guarantees that the world will forget you. If anything, dispossessing the world of these types of information bits about your identity mean only that you'll be remembered in a more representative way. Put simply, the meat of the right to be forgotten doesn't guarantee a wholesale forgetting. Instead, it's more like an effort to maintain the most authentic version of ourselves in the ever-growing public space. And still, this is a bit abstract. So hopefully to make this make more sense, to put some meat on the definition, let's look at one of the modern cases that deals with the right to be forgotten. That case, Google versus Mario Gonzalez, begins in Spain. Apparently, Spain has a law that requires publication of certain information about foreclosure actions. So the story goes like this. A Spaniard fails to pay taxes, and the Spanish government repossesses his house and puts it up for auction to make up for the missed payments. As required by Spanish law, a newspaper then published the auction notice, and Google search results turned up that newspaper article and notice of auction. A few years after this tax drama, repossession, auction, and whatnot, the Spaniard gets his taxes in order, his credit sorted out, and he pays his taxes regularly. That is, the Google search results are no longer representative of the Spaniard's financial situation, yet, of course, they still show up if you Googled him. So he sued Google, arguing that the information was no longer relevant and should therefore be deleted from its search results. And he won. The case eventually made it up to Europe's highest court, the Court of Justice of the European Union, which said that individuals have the right, under certain circumstances, to ask search engines to remove links with personal information about them that, as we talked about, is inaccurate, inadequate, irrelevant, or excessive. As it relates to the Spaniard, the Google search results covering the back taxes, repossession, and auction of his home were irrelevant to the Spaniard's new financial life. And that's basically the right, in all its privacy heralding and vague glory. But how does it work? Well, as the case points out, in practice, Google has to delete information when it gets a request from a person affected. Upon request, Google has to do some sort of case-by-case analysis of each request to see if the information in question is accurate and adequate or relevant. If Google denies the request, then the person can appeal to a government agency, which will look at Google's decision and decide whether there should or shouldn't have been a deletion. If Google does delete the information, that's it. It's just deleted. There's no public notice, no announcing, nothing. Because obviously to do so would be defeating the purpose of being forgotten in the first place. One day, the Google link just disappears. And this one case has fueled tons of news stories, law review articles, debates, and whatever other media about whether or not the right to be forgotten should be something the U.S. embraces. And actually, like I talked about earlier, it's something we've flirted with before, though on a way lesser level and without the internet. In 1918, an ex-prostitute was charged with murder, acquitted, and then tried to take on a quiet and anonymous life. Hollywood, however, apparently being as much of a monster back then as it is now, saw fit to make a movie about her, and in 1925, The Red Kimono came out, and it detailed her whole life. Not at all happy about that, she sued the producer and won. The Supreme Court said, quote, "Any person living a life of rectitude has the right of happiness, which includes freedom of unnecessary attacks on his or her character, social standing, or reputation." And that sounds an awful lot like the European court and the modern version of the right to be forgotten, huh? Well, rest assured, never to be overly progressive, the U.S. quickly mended this error in a different case 10 years later. In that case, a literal boy genius turned out to be a semi-celebrity and tried to live a quiet life and without recognition. Then an article in The New Yorker blew up his spot and caused all sorts of unwanted attention. Here, though, totally different than a decade before, The Supreme Court said that there are limits to the right to control your life and facts about yourself. The court also said that there is social value in published facts generally, and that a person cannot ignore their status merely because they want to. Of course, with the internet, these two cases are resurrected from the graveyard of legal irrelevance and actually help frame the issue as we think about it now. And really, there are two major themes you hear over and over again in the debates about whether or not the U.S. should adopt the right to be forgotten: the right to free speech and the right to privacy. Advocates of the right point out that in a true democracy, a proper democracy, you have the right to control your own life. And that includes making decisions about when to speak and how you're presented. They say that deletion of information from internet searches isn't censorship because the source material is still staying there. It's just the search results disappear. They say that the U.S. already has some forms of the right, namely in privacy laws and expungement laws, which are laws that allow people to have stuff deleted from their criminal record. On the other hand, opponents of the right flatly call it censorship. They say it's vague and subjective and prone to abuse. They say it's a bad fix to a legitimate problem because it favors deletion and a variety of different solutions might be more workable. So, which is it? Does free speech win or does privacy win? Well, let's look at each and see if we can figure it out. First, free speech. The right to free speech. There's just no way I can go through the nooks and crannies of free speech. It's one of the most cherished rights in Western-style democracies, and it has all the laws and rules and exceptions and quirks and burps to prove it. That being said, I can clarify a few things. First, freedom of speech only prohibits the government from unduly restricting speech, not private citizens. That's why artists and TV show hosts and your racist neighbor can say whatever they want. It's why the Westboro Baptist Church can picket outside soldiers' funerals, spewing whatever flavor of hate they think will get them the most attention. So if the deletion of the information we've been talking about was merely just an agreement or an ask between two private parties, there'd be no free speech issues. But that's not what's going on here. Instead, we're talking about the right to be forgotten. Rights refer to things enshrined in law, and laws are things the government creates. So if the U.S. embraced the right to be forgotten in some federal law or regulation, the right to free speech would apply and there might be a conflict. Well, what kind of conflict? Laws that restrict free speech fall into two sorts of categories. And we could pretty safely say that laws protecting the right to be forgotten would restrict subject matter of a certain speech. The law would apply depending on the topic of whatever is said. Now, in order for that law to be valid, for it to be constitutional, it must pass the strict scrutiny test. And this is a test we've talked about before in relation to refugees traveling across state lines, and it's a really, really difficult test to pass. It would require the law creating the right to be forgotten to be no greater than necessary to fulfill some important government interest. What exactly that means is a little bit more detailed than we need to get into, though, because there are two other rules that would come into play: the rule against vagueness and the rule against overbreadth. A law restricting free speech is void for being vague if a reasonable person cannot tell which speech is prohibited and which speech is allowed. For example, vagrancy laws in California and Florida have been struck down for being vague because they forbid things reasonable people can't make sense of, like, quote, loafing or strolling or wandering around from place to place. And there's also the rule against overbreadth, which gets rid of laws that extend too far into permissible speech, laws that scoop too much valid speech into the things that they control. An example of that would be something like a law that criminalizes sale and video of animal cruelty. That might be overbroad if it's taken to apply to videos of legal recreational hunting or fishing or things like that. So with vagueness and overbreadth in mind, we can look at the right to be forgotten and see if it holds up. So again, as if I haven't already said this enough times, the right to be forgotten would guarantee that information that's inaccurate, inadequate, irrelevant, or excessive would be deleted from internet search results. But what really do those words mean? If you ask 10 reasonable people what, quote, inadequate information is, would you get the same answer? What about inaccurate information? Obviously, there are your easy cases, your clearly that never happened cases. Clearly, George Bush didn't have a secret marriage with Dick Cheney. But what about George Bush lying about Saddam Hussein having weapons of mass destruction? Would calling that a lie be inaccurate? Did he know that there were no WMDs? Should he have known that there were no WMDs? Could a reasonable person be asked to tell the difference, especially if that difference was as consequential as deleting that information from internet search results forever? And are those categories of information overbroad? Would deleting, quote, irrelevant information about people gobble up information that's in fact quite relevant? Right after the European Court of Justice came out with this case establishing the right to be forgotten, Google began receiving requests for deletion of all sorts of stuff across Europe. Though, and I should point this out, it wasn't an opening of the floodgate situation. From what I understand, there's a pretty moderate level of requests for deletion. Still, right after the write was decided, a pianist from the UK petitioned Google to take down a bad review of one of his performances, claiming that the bad review was irrelevant, thereby damaged his reputation. He was actually denied, but under the terms we have to work with, is there a risk that speech we actually want out there would end up being deleted because of some subjective interpretation? Admittedly, I'm painting a pretty skeptical picture of the right to be forgotten under free speech. But where does privacy fit into all this? I thought I said that the right to be forgotten was a classic battle between privacy and speech. So what does privacy have to say? There's really only one privacy tort that might help us map out what the right to be forgotten would look like. And before I jump into that, what are torts? Torts? Torts. Tort claims make up most of the lawsuits you think of when you think about lawsuits. To put it as plain as possible, torts are negligence cases. You rear-ended me? Tort. You borrowed my one-of-a-kind dance shoes and busted the heel out? Tort. You trespassed on my land? Tort. Torts are basically when ordinary people do more or less ordinary bummers to one another and they try to settle it with a lawsuit. There are actually a bunch of torts covering privacy-related issues, but only one that helps the right to be forgotten. There are things like intrusion upon seclusion that prohibit digging through your personal stuff and false light prohibiting knowingly publishing false facts about a person. And actually, now that I say that, intrusion upon seclusion and false light do relate to the right to be forgotten insofar as they deal with inadequate or excessive information. But one major exception to these laws is truth. If in fact what's been published is true, then a defamation case or a false light case won't hold up. So these aren't torts I'm going to get into. The tort I wanted to get into is the public disclosure of private facts. And that tort basically forbids publishing private facts, the kind that would be highly offensive to a reasonable person, when those facts are not of legitimate public interest. And what exactly are facts that are highly offensive to the reasonable person is basically anybody's guess. Courts have said that publishing the identity of a rape victim was okay because the name had previously been recorded in a highly obscure public record. A court also said that a person's sexual orientation is not considered private where the person is an active member of the San Francisco homosexual community, even though his orientation was not known outside that community. And really what I mean to be pointing out here is that existing privacy laws deal with some of the same types of information as the right to be forgotten, namely inaccurate or excessive information. Sure, these laws set a much higher bar. Information that is truthful is almost always going to be out in the public view, and really only the most private facts that are not of the public interest will be suppressed. Because there's this overlap, because rights to privacy deal with generally the same stuff as the right to be forgotten, and because free speech is so cherished in the US, really whether the US should embrace the right is a question of scale or degree of intensity. That is, the question is about, do we want to extend existing law and lower the bar to cover inadequate, irrelevant, or excessive information? I don't really know, but I have some guesses. And while we stew on all this, here's Leonard Cohen's I Can't Forget. Forever.
And I can't forget.
I can't forget.
I can't forget.
I can't forget, but I don't. But I don't remember what.
Ah,
my dear friends, thank you so much for coming this evening, for standing in the rain, for remembering.
Okay, so what do we know? We know that there's this new right out there in the world, the right to be forgotten. It relates entirely to that growing vortex of all information, the internet. The right would leave source material, like newspaper or public records, untouched, but would delete from internet search results information about a person on that person's request that is inaccurate, irrelevant, inadequate, or excessive. We also know that freedom of speech only prohibits the government from restricting speech, but that recognizing a right to be forgotten would be government action. We know that laws restricting speech have to pass a very high legal bar to be constitutional, and that the right to be forgotten might have a bit of trouble with vagueness and overbreath rules for free speech, mostly because the right is confusingly defined and scoops up a bunch of speech that it doesn't mean to. We know that privacy laws protect some of the same stuff as the right to be forgotten, stuff like inaccurate information or excessive information. But truth is also a pretty strong defense for reporting certain facts, and really only the very most private information will be suppressed. How private is the most private? Well, apparently the identity of a victim of sexual violence is not private enough. So where does this leave us? Well, there's this very serious reality that more and more private information is being splayed out for the internet scrutiny. The internet is increasingly becoming a one-stop shop for anything and everything we could want to know about any and every person. There's also this awkwardly formed right to be forgotten that allows us to ask search engines to delete information from search results. Ultimately, under the right as it exists now, the right belongs to an individual person, but it's the search engine that decides if the information is inaccurate enough or irrelevant enough or inadequate and excessive enough to be deleted. And this strikes me as dangerous. Some information out there about people could probably be deleted and no injustice be done. But it's the manner by which the right to be forgotten would achieve the deleting that freaks me out. Having Google steer the ship at the request of an aggrieved person doesn't seem to be a good model. For one, there's more pressures for Google to delete than go through the fight of keeping the information out there. If Google simply deletes stuff on any request, it's much cheaper for them, and they can forego all of the administrative costs of building out this huge information checking structure. More importantly, though, Google steering the ship means that private companies in charge. The deliberation about what types of information are irrelevant or inadequate, inaccurate, and excessive, they would be done behind closed doors and would not be official. And that's part of the importance of law, particularly free speech law. It's done in public. It's very rigorous, so that the lines are very clearly drawn about what is and is not allowed. As the right to be forgotten shakes out now, it's not the public that controls that conversation, but private companies. Private companies are not held to the same standard as public institutions. They literally function for profit and are more vulnerable to money, wealth, and private interests. They are free to grant the right to other companies and corporations, to politicians and moneyed interests, and all without a uniform process and being behind closed doors. At least with public institutions, that discourse is out there somewhere. We can see it. We can process it as a set. We can find patterns and call foul. Haven't we already let private companies manage information technology enough? If something's going to be evaporated from a meaningful public view, shouldn't we somehow know about it? The standard refrain about the U.S.'s approach to free speech is that the only cure for bad speech is more speech. Usually that's an annoying way to excuse offensive speech, but in the case of the right to be forgotten, maybe we'd be better off allowing the aggrieved person to comment on the information in question or at least somehow publicly address the issue, as opposed to letting private companies just delete it out of thin air. That's it for today's show. Like I mentioned earlier, Radio Free Brooklyn is now on Patreon, a way for listeners just like you to support the people that keep the station going. Go to www.patreon.com/Radio Free Brooklyn to sign up to be a patron for as little as $1 a month. Also, send me emails. I've kind of shifted the shows I'm planning on doing, which may or may not be a good thing. Now, I want to do a show on campaign finance. I want to do one on Bush v. Gore in 2000 and the Florida election, because really what happened there. I want to do one on Guantanamo and the U.S. torture program because Obama might close it down before he leaves office and Rubio is talking, hitting that scene full force again. I still want to do one on LGBT issues internationally. In 2 weeks, I'm doing a show on nothing. That is, I'm not doing a show. Instead, my time slot's going to be a review of shows from the Frigid Festivals. So be sure to check that out. And seriously, if you want to hear a specific show topic, let me know. Also, and this is kind of crucial, let me know if you like the show. If you listen to the show or you want it to keep going. Long story short, Radio Free Brooklyn is now corralling all our little duckies into line to figure out how season 3 is going to look. And as it is, I don't know if I can handle doing another season. I'm a one-man band here wrestling the nonsense of the fringes of the law. And I've proven no match for getting all this legal gobbledygook into order. I'm not totally sure yet if I can swing another season, but it would really go a long way if I knew that you liked the show or if I got feedback from you on the types of things you want to hear or a structure you might think is better. So seriously, email me at theendofthelaw@gmail.com. I'm Grant Shubin, You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is the end of the law, and this is the end of the show. Thanks for listening.